Good afternoon and welcome to another episode of In Case of Emergency. I'm your host, Don Pontius, and I am the author of Some Helpful Tips for Prepping and Some Helpful Tips for Bug Out Bags. Today we have a very special day. First things first, I'd like to say happy birthday to my very, very good close friend and brother, Kurt. You know who you are. Happy birthday, my friend. Welcome to old age. We have now passed 45. Anyhow, moving on to the special announcement, I have Vinny Eastwood, one of the preeminent voices of alternative media. He's going to be on the show today. I'm going to interview him. He is my first favorite Kiwi, my second being Kovu, only because I've known Vinny for a little bit longer. I interacted with Vinny. I had the opportunity, actually, to interact with Vinny when he was on alternative media television back when it was Green Wave Radio with Chris Green, and he knew me then as Falcon. I was a regular caller before I got back into radio and got back on the show. So I'd like to bring Vinny on at this time and introduce him and have him introduce himself and kind of give a rundown of who he is and what he does for alternative media. Vinny, are you there?
Yes, I am indeed. And I was finding it interesting that your friend's just turned 45. And isn't it ironic that after you turn 45, you realize you're no longer a cult?
Oh, geez, man. I realized that after I hit 40 and I started waking up. And if I didn't hurt, something was wrong.
yeah. Life just kind of gets worse and worse, and it's like, you know, it's just one of those things, and you just sort of have to deal with it. Because I just turned 30, and I'm like, okay, great, I'm finally old enough for people to take me seriously. And then, interestingly enough, people have taken me less seriously than they have my entire life just in recent weeks on Facebook.
Oh, man. Well, yeah, and that's the downside to social media. I'm really finding that social media, while it's a great tool to get some message out there, you expose yourself quite a bit more to the trolls and the idiots when you actually get out there and put yourself out there and put out information. So why don't you give my listeners a rundown of what you've been doing in alternative media and activism since you got started?
Well, I'm a bit of a narcissistic, egotistical, selfish prat, and unfortunately, I had the illusion that the world is all fine, and you can just have a career, and you're not a slave, and you're not going to get exterminated. I had that bubble burst for me, so instead of using my personality traits and salesman skills to accumulate money, manipulate people, and do nothing good for humanity, I gave up all of those trappings, all of that income, and have basically been on the bones of my ass ever since 2008. I took my last paycheck, which was $4,000 cash and $11,900 worth of shopping vouchers for a local mall chain here called Westfield. Got myself a Mac computer, a tripod and a camera, and just went out, started to film protests, public meetings, and doing videos of it, because I met these two guys at a party, and they do green screening or whatever, and I asked them, oh, how can I get into the film industry? I really want to get into it. And they say, just do it, you know. And so I kind of, through lack of options rather than making a choice, I kind of had to go out and be New Zealand's alternative media. And 6 years, 7 years, coming up 8 years on, I have more YouTube subscribers than the largest mainstream media YouTube equivalent in New Zealand. In fact, I could argue more than all of the news YouTube channels combined. I have more subscribers. I've interviewed and put more Kiwis online than any other news source in New Zealand history, put more protests online than them as well. And let me just put that as a proviso, because there's a lot of like old stock footage and things like that that you can get to the archives in the New Zealand Film Society and what have you. However, they're not available online. Right, they're not actually available for public viewing, and they don't include all the protests' speeches. Now, people go like, oh, protests don't accomplish anything. And I say, well, you're right in one way, but you're wrong in another. It depends what you're going to a protest to accomplish. Some people go to a protest expecting that they'll accomplish what the protest is about. For example, they're up against the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement. You know, it's going to screw everybody. It's going to have corporate control over the country. Okay, fine. It's not going to happen. It's not going to, like, be thrown away just because a couple of people marched in the street and chanted some slogans. So what my goal going to a protest is, and this is generally across the board, is to, A1, get on the megaphone and have some fun, make a few people laugh and give them a little bit of information, and film myself doing it. Mm-hmm. And secondly, my obligation is to the activists and the speakers who come to those protests, because often they have a lot of information and it's well-researched, documented information, and they, like me, devote their lives to a higher calling, not because of the lustrous riches and rewards that were offered, but because, again, as a lack of alternative. And my obligation as a filmmaker is to capture what they have said, edit it sure. nicely enough, and put it up on YouTube so that people can actually hear what's being said, instead of just saying it once to a group of people who will mostly forget what was said within a day, and within a year be banished mm-hmm. to the pages of your brain's mind of history.
But really quick, I wanted to throw a shout out to the people at Revere Radio. I had a problem getting connected up to Revere. We are now on. And for those of you who are just now hearing my show, In Case of Emergency, I have Vinnie Eastwood, New Zealand's preeminent voice in the alternative media and one of the more well-known alternative media personalities, at least as far as I'm concerned. I've known of him for at least 7 years. I got involved with Vinnie early on, and in fact, about 4 years ago, I had the extreme pleasure of being on the Green Wave TV radio show with Vinny. We got to talk and had some good repartee along with Chris Green. And I thought I'd bring him on today to just kind of introduce him and get his name out there, because I don't care what country you're from. If there is a voice out there trying to get the truth out about chemtrails, about government corruption, it's all part of being prepared. Being aware of what's going on in the world around you helps you to make the proper decisions and be prepared adequately for when everything goes tits up, as they say, or goes completely foul and the fecal matter impacts the oscillating air mover. So that being said, I wanted to bring Vinny on and kind of interview him and remind people, hey guys, we still have a new call-in number. Don't forget, if you have any questions, to call in. And the number is area code 567-314-3081. Now, Vinny, I just saw some posts on your page, or posts that you've reacted to, about rainwater being tested in New Zealand, and you're actually showing the results that there are barium salts and aluminum traces in the rainwater that's been collected in New Zealand, what I consider probably one of the most pristine wildernesses left in the world. yeah, right. Well, I've seen a vast majority of the United States literally get overrun, and you guys still have some areas that have no people living in it. We do too in the United States, but they're all federally controlled lands, and obviously they're not being taken care of. But can you tell us about that, about the chemtrail chemicals showing up in the rainwater?
Well, we have had a number of people in New Zealand who've been collecting rainwater samples, and it's only just been very recently that we've found labs that have been capable of actually testing it. And indeed, when the tests were conducted, we came back with those, what you call the typical chemtrail results, aluminum, barium, and strontium. And this means that we've got physical evidence now that chemtrailing is happening in New Zealand. Not just video footage of the chemtrails, not just pictures of it, not just testimonials from award-winning journalists. There's actually a whole list of things that are supporting the chemtrail argument. And the list of things that discredit the chemtrail argument are people who call you names, people who insult you, and people who don't listen to you. And that's right. It. Full stop. Comma, comma. Rule off. No, they don't exist. And if you believe that they do exist, you're crazy. And that is their scientific rebuttal encapsulated at all. And repeat the process, you know. Kind of like washing your hair with poo, lather, rinse, and repeat sort of thing, and eventually that crap will sink in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I pointed out probably 2 weeks ago that a scientific study by the Royal Society out of England actually stated very implicitly and very clearly in no uncertain terms that chemical dispersion in the atmosphere, or what they call geoengineering, was in fact occurring and has been occurring for the better part of a decade. But then a mainstream media outlet that will remain unnamed, but its initials are MSNBC, came out with an ad, not an ad, but an article stating from a NASA scientist. Now, I'm going to put a little bit of background here. These are the same scientists that said we are experiencing seasons because of the speed of the rotation of the Earth. We go into winter, the Earth slows down. I have that article. It's on my blog, and it's an actual NASA scientist that said the Earth actually slows down its rotation in wintertime. They were talking about these massive earthquakes in Chile causing global cooling because of slowing down the rotation of the planet Earth, and that's why we have winter and summer. I mean, these are the morons that rebut chemtrails by saying they're normal condensation trails that because the atmospheric conditions are right, they don't dissipate very quickly, but they do dissipate. And I'm looking up at the sky and I'm going, well, the atmospheric conditions got to be damn near perfect every day of the calendar year.
And I love when you got video footage of one plane at cruising altitude laying a chemtrail, and another plane not too far from it at around about the same altitude laying a contrail that's disappearing about 15 plane lengths behind it. And they say, right. Oh, it's exactly the same thing. Really? Really? It's exactly the same thing? Is that what you're freaking telling me? When was the last time you started up your car and you drove around town and left a trail the entire length of the town that you drove around? No? Never freaking happened before? It's because it can't happen. It's not physically possible. And the retardation of people that cannot even see very, very blatant, simple scientific principles right in front of their eyes tells me that we got some really, really effective brainwashing going on here. How do you, ladies and gentlemen, how do you know if you're under mind control? Here's how. If you've never questioned whether or not you're under some form of mind control.
That's a very valid point. And I want to point out that mind control or in fact intimidation or misinformation is in fact a form of terrorism by the definition out of the Merriam-Webster's dictionary. I mean, it's a systematic use of violence or intimidation to create a general climate of fear in a population to bring about particular political objectives. That was actually defined in the 1700s in Merriam-Webster's as the provenance of governments for the most part.
I don't understand exactly how people can believe authority the entirety of the time, namely because to me it just sounds kind of stupid, right? Mm-hmm. If you can look back, and I tried to have this argument, you know when you're really, really tired and or hungover and then someone starts an intellectual debate with you and they kind of beat you even though they know nothing just because they're really aggressive in that debate and you just can't be bothered because you're too freaking tired, too freaking hungover, and you can't organize your thoughts correctly to argue correctly against some idiot? And this is what happened on New Year's Eve morning. I was trying to convince somebody that there's actually a general trend in legislation, media, and just hierarchical structures in general that is trending downwards, away from any kind of freedom or responsibility, and upwards towards tyranny, some form of generalized enslavement, extermination, that kind of thing. Now, anybody who's monitored any form of legislative process in any of the Five Eyes nations, these are the English-speaking countries, Canada, UK, Australia, New Zealand, America, anybody who's been monitoring any of the legislation that's been passed in these countries over the last 10 years will undoubtedly agree 100% that we're not heading towards more freedom and more equality and more happiness and, right. and more sharing of the resources and less democide possibility, you know, more or less.
But, you know. Yeah.
It's pretty straightforward, isn't it? I mean, how could anybody freaking deny it? That's the question I've got to ask. And that's why I know that so many people are currently operating under mind control, because they can't even make up their own minds with the things that are right there in front of them. It's almost like the shaman who could see Columbus's ships when all his tribesmen could not, until he showed them.
Right. Well, and again, the funny thing is I keep telling my listeners, who are for the most part a group of preppers, people who are preparing for whatever contingency or disaster, that being aware is as much a factor of being prepared as anything else. It's like you said, Vinny, to me, common sense is like a superpower. They lack it. And when they exercise it, they're like, they stand head and shoulders above the common folk of the United States or any other English speaking or non-English speaking country out there. They are being flim-flammed. It's much like Rome, first century Rome, pre-first century Rome, bread and circuses. When the government was screwing everything up royally, and they were selling off all their assets to pay their bills, they threw these gigantic festivals, these big gladiatorial combat circuses, as they're called. That's where we get our word circus from. They would go to the Colosseums and they would have these multi-week fights, and they would hand out free bread to the populace to keep them fed and to keep them entertained. Meanwhile, the government is literally stealing them blind, enslaving everybody to debt, enslaving everybody physically, mentally and emotionally, by keeping them distracted from what's really going on. And I think that's what purpose alternative media has been serving. We are the crier in the town square saying, hey guys, wake the hell up. This is happening. You need to know about it. The news is not reporting on it, but we are. We are the voice in the wilderness, as it were.
I do believe that you're correct. However, it's kind of like being the voice of civilization in an uncivilized time. And it's just basically we're surrounded by tribespeople with bones in their noses and things of that nature that are trying to eat us. That's kind of the intellectual preparedness that the average citizen now has after decades upon decades of television, vacuous, pointless mainstream talk radio, reality TV shows, and the whole lot. It's almost as if life itself has been castrated. They've taken all the good things out of it, all the motivation out of life, and now the only motivation seems to be survival. More or less, you have to work, you have to pay your bills, you have to feed your kids, and beyond that, there is nothing. There is no invention, there is no greater calling, there is no self-sacrifice for the greater good inherent in our society globally now. And this is the reason why things like your radio show and mine have experienced a great surge in the last decades, because human beings cry out for what they do not have. They cry out for what they can't have. And what they're not allowed to have now is an independent thought in their head. What they're not allowed to have now is true conscience, for which they would take truth as the authority rather than authority as truth. People right. want to live by natural law, natural means. People want to do good. But there's no incentive process for that anymore. If you want to think for yourself and do good, the first thing that's going to happen to you is you're going to get demonized, set up, and attacked in some way, shape, or form. And you just kind of have to deal with it.
No, absolutely. I mean, and I'm right now, I'm seeing that in the United States, at least on my side of things, on this side of the pond, as it were, We are experiencing this anarchist movement that has a lot of good to it, but it has a lot of negative to it. I mean, I myself am I'm a patriot. I'm a self-proclaimed patriot to the United States, not the country, not the government, but to the ideals on which the U.S. was founded. And they keep throwing this thing out. You know, I didn't sign this social contract, this constitution, this government that was created back in 1776. And there's this meme floating around that really kind of gets under my skin, and it really, well, frankly, it pisses me off. It says, and it's a picture of the founding fathers working on the Declaration of Independence. And it says, these guys love freedom so much that they wrote a contract hundreds of years before your birth without your consent, binding you in enforced tax servitude until your death. Now, I want to clear some things up here for those morons out there, those basic intellectual midgets that believe this crap. That compact is not a contract. As a matter of fact, it is an outline to restrict your government. The people who are ostensibly responsible for keeping your nation running in the right direction, it was a limitation of their powers and their abilities. And the Declaration itself says that when the government oversteps these bounds, we are the United States people, or the people of this country, or any country for that matter, are honor-bound and duty-bound to step up and change it, whether that by means of peace or by violence. We must change that governmental system. And the Constitution of the United States further outlined and delineated those powers and restricted, heavily restricted, what government can do. And it was only in 1913 that we instituted tax servitude on the United States people. We did not have a personal income tax in the U.S. of A. until December 23rd, 1913, when it was snuck through Congress and signed by President Wilson, who on his deathbed lamented the fact that he has enslaved the nation for the rest of time immemorial. So this meme is so much bull crap. I just wish I had a shovel to put it on my garden, because it pisses me off that these people are supposed freedom fighters, that they're so much about anarchy and personal freedom that they do not understand the basic premise upon which the United States itself was founded. And that, I feel, is as much part of our job, Vinny, as anything else, is to educate people as to the truth, the foundational principles of humanity's governing themselves, and having the power to restrict the government. And I don't know if that exists in New Zealand. I'm not very familiar with your governmental structure.
Oh, we can't. Well, it was. I was talking with some American tourists on a plane back from Queenstown in the South Island of New Zealand, and we were talking about our countries and how messed up they are. And I said to them the Thomas Jefferson quote: "It's a patriot's duty to protect his country from his government."
Absolutely.
You know, and that's ultimately what it is. Loyalty to one's country is not loyalty to a flag, nor is it loyalty to a hierarchical structure that controls the land. It's to the land itself, to the people themselves. And there really isn't anything else included in that. A true patriot is somebody whose motivation is born of suffering, self-sacrifice, and a willingness to create a future that does not exist yet, that is much better than the past that has been previously endured by other generations who have laid down their lives to give us the petty freedoms that we have now. It is our obligation to our ancestors to maintain those freedoms at the very least, or to increase them at the very worst when they get taken away from you. Sometimes people do have to die and lay down on the barbed wire and allow others to crawl over your back so that your country does not get reduced to naught but ashes and dust beneath the feet of jackboot thugs.
Well, and again, I want to point out that there is a big, big debate in the United States regarding the original compact, the original Constitution. They wrote that Declaration of Independence on pain of passing it through the First and Second Continental Congresses. They had to take out the clauses that Thomas Jefferson himself was a slave owner, but he put in the original Declaration of Independence that they would absolve all slaves. they would free all indentured servants in the United States. But the Southern colonies objected to that and would not vote in approval or ratification of the Declaration of Independence. And if you have half of a brain and you take the time to study history, you'll understand that that was a political move on the part of the Southern colonies. And at the time, they were talking about free and independent states that were to stand on their own, but join together to a common purpose. And the Southern states would not join to that purpose unless their conditions were met. And we endured morally reprehensible slavery only because it was the only way to get the Declaration signed and sent to Prince to King George and have the battle fought to ensure the freedom for everybody. And Thomas Jefferson fully intended to free the slaves when he became president, but the Congress kept shooting him down. Now, any real student of history doesn't bother to take the party line bullshit that they're fed in public school. They bother to open up first person accounts. They bother to crack open actual letters and books written by Jefferson or any of the other founding fathers to understand the principles and the ideals put behind the basic foundational principles of the United States. And yeah, we had to fight a civil war over states' rights. And that wasn't about slavery, Vinny. Contrary to anybody who's listening or any popular belief, it was not about slavery. It was about federal control of the states. And after the Civil War was the beginning of the downfall of the United States of America as we know it. The Articles of Confederation were very clear that they were going to fight for their freedom against the Union because they were being restricted in what they could do. And Abe Lincoln jumped on the train. He did not like slaves. He thought they were subhuman, didn't deserve a vote. But he jumped on the anti-slavery train to get as much sympathy from the northern states as possible so that they would support this war. But, you know, I'm a student of history. I've actually taken the time to read this stuff. But there are people out there who claim to be anarchists and about freedom and understanding. Well, without understanding basic history, whether it's in New Zealand or the United States, they cannot have a valid, truthful debate with anybody.
Well, it's when your entire life is built on a lie, being able to bring truth into the debate is not possible. Not entirely dissimilar from if you were born without legs, you can't really exactly stand as tall as those next to you without something propping you up, some form of prosthesis. And I think this is kind of what's happened over time slowly, is that humans... our people, you know, whichever country you happen to be in, have merely had everything that made them human amputated with really, really effective local anesthetic. They've taken away the frontal lobe of the brain. They've taken away our empathy. They've taken away our creativity. They've taken away, in many cases, our motivation for life itself. And this is something that happens all the time throughout history. It's a repeating process. People struggle really, really hard in dark times, and then everything gets really, really good and really, really easy and convenient, and they suddenly lose their passion for life because it's no longer under threat constantly. And what's happened now is that we've taken threat, like from a tiger in the jungle or something like that, and we've digitized it so that every single time you're sitting in front of a television, you're getting this aura of endless threat being pumped out through the news media as if you're constantly under attack by a tiger. But instead of you actually having to run away and get some exercise or release large quantities of human growth hormone into your bloodstream, which is what happens when you sprint away from danger,
right,
we sit constantly and we're just getting this massive acidic chemical buildup, and we're having no knowledge throughput. It seems to me that if you're going to be sitting there watching the news, you're not going to get really informed about anything. And that's what's deeply problematic to me, is that I haven't watched television since January of last year, Falcon. And what's really funny is I have a whole lot of listeners who still do watch mainstream media, who still do follow that crap. And I can understand why, because I used to do it myself. It's not called watching television. It's called analyzing enemy communications. Okay. Well, and what, can fair. I just finish my point?
Yeah, go ahead.
when they tell me about a current event, like about a politician or a piece of policy or something of that nature, I would have not heard about it at all. They explain to me two things about it, and then suddenly a whole bunch of things click into place, like tick, 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 ah. And then I explain to them what this news story is really about, who's really behind it, and what they're actually trying to teach you here. So even without seeing the source material, via my cynical, jaded journalistic assumption alone, I'm more informed than people. This is why I don't choose to stay, quote-unquote, up to date and up with the play of everything that's going on right here today. Because often, you don't actually need to be that up to date. And more to the point, if you haven't heard it before, it's still news to you anyway.
Right. And again, I wanted to point out that you, like a master tactician, you hear that there's a, say, piece of legislation. Well, every move in a battle has six results that need to come out of it. Every tactical move has six results. And you're able to sit back and assess this and go, okay, this is why, this is where, this is when, and this is how. And I'm going to tell you what the six results are going to be. If I can only figure out four, I need to find out what those other two are. I need to do some research. But I'm like you. I cut the cable. Actually, I cut my cable 2 years ago. I have what's called a Roku, internet-only streaming television. We use our television for entertainment purposes only. My children don't watch TV. I catch local news through radio as I'm driving. I try to tune in and kind of get an idea. I, you know, keep my fingers on the strings, as it were. But for the most part, I find it so frustrating. I find myself yelling at the radio, telling people, you know, they can't hear me, but I'm yelling at them how stupid they are, how moronic this is. And it frustrates me. And I'm getting to the point where I just want to turn it all off, because I need to focus down on what's really more important. And that's helping people get prepared for what's going to happen in the near future. You mentioned very succinctly, governments running over people like jackbooted thugs. And guys, that's the definition of terrorism. We are being attacked on a regular daily basis by our own governments. They are trying desperately to control every aspect of our lives. That is exactly what Soviet Russia was like. That is exactly what Soviet China is like, or Russian, I'm sorry, Communist China is like. If you don't believe me, look at North Korea, look at China, and all the other fully blown communistic countries. Look at Cuba. A door just got opened to Cuba by our disaster in chief, and people are lauding him as some kind of peacemaker. And meanwhile, the Castros are laughing at him, and they're thumbing their nose at him and literally saying, screw you, we're not going to do anything. You do whatever you want, but we're not changing.
I do think that that's basically the prerequisite of believing in hardcore communism, is to believe it despite all available evidence. Not just some available evidence, but all available evidence.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So,
right.
You know, here's like a basic quick capsule review of communism throughout history. What killed more people in the 20th century than any other cause of unnatural death? Your government. Namely, communist governments. What centrally planned economy throughout the entirety of human history back past the last 100,000 years didn't result in starvation and war? None! Okay, so here's communism. Do you want to be enslaved and exterminated? Not enslaved or exterminated, but enslaved and then exterminated. Those are your two motivations. Libertarianism, do you want to be responsible for your own actions and actually be able to have freedom of some kind, okay?
Right.
And be secure in your own family, property, effects, things like that. Have things that other people cannot touch or take from you.
Well, that's exactly the principles of libertarianism, but you just reflected back at me essentially and in encapsulated form what Jefferson and the actual intent of the founding documentation of the United States of America was about. It was about, hey, these freedoms are not, these rights are not given by government. They're inherent. They're given by God. They're your greater being, your creator. You are free to do these things because you're given these rights just being alive.
I read in a book, Falcon, that the reason the founding fathers said that it's God that gives you these rights is not for spiritual reasons, but for legal ones. Okay? Right. Because there's no legal authority that's higher than God, the creator of all.
That's absolutely true. And I don't like to, I don't do a lot of politics on my show, and I don't do a lot of religion on my show. But we're talking about things that are both political and religious because they are what was written. They are the foundational ideals that I think every nation should go towards, libertarianism. And if anything, you look at the original Constitution, you look at the original intent of the first 10 amendments and not any amendment after that, barring, looking at the amendment to repeal slavery. But I'm just talking about the base 10 amendments, the original amendments to the Constitution, the original Declaration of Independence, the original Constitution. You look at the firsthand resources from the founding fathers, and they basically laid out libertarianism. They said, look, you need a government to take care of the day-to-day stuff and deal with other governments, but that's it. And back in the day, and you'll see this is happening in New Zealand, you can affirm this. Back in the day, in the United States, there were what we had called statesmen, people who would go in and serve in the government in the capacity of representing the people from their state or their region. And they would serve for 2 years for literally a pittance, just enough money to barely get by. And then they would leave government and go back to work on their farms or their industry or whatever else. And that was the day of the statesman, the person who would go in, serve with due diligence to the people that they were representing. And then when their term was up, they would leave. But now in the United States, and I'm sure it's true also for New Zealand and the UK and every other English-speaking nation out there, you have these career politicians. And in the United States, 50% – now, let me reiterate this. In the United States, 1% of all people in the United States are millionaires, and 50% of all people representing us in Congress are millionaires. Does that tell you something?
Somebody was arguing yesterday that government always looks after the working man. And I said to him, are you frickin' serious? Okay. Just like the wise man said to the star that told them that the son of God was born. Are you serious? Anyway,
the star Sirius, guys, look it up. Sirrus.
Yeah, seriously. And what I asked him was, so are you saying that people who have no power, no connections, and no money are more likely to be served by the people who have all the money, all the power, and all the connections? Okay? Right. By government. Okay? What does government run on? Does it run on goodwill? You know? Is it a it's not a charity, is it? Because it takes everything by freaking force. Somebody told me the other day, I'm free, you can't prove that I'm not free. And I go, really? Do you pay some form of income tax? And they go, yeah, of course I do. Did you get given a choice about whether or not you pay that income tax? Well, no, okay. I was born into this society, you know, it's just the way things have always been. So if you were born into a society where killing and raping children on the first day of every month or something like that in order to keep yourself young was just the thing everybody did, you'd have no moral qualms about that whatsoever. There's a thing called natural law. It's when you look at something objectively, or at least this is how it works in practice as far as I've discerned, you look at a practice objectively, and if it actually violates people or their rights or their freedoms or something of that nature, and they haven't done anything to deserve it, then it's not a good thing. All right. And right. When you're talking about taxation, I've just realized, you know, I know more about America than I do about New Zealand some days, you know. Certainly know more about the founding fathers of America than I do about the founding fathers of New Zealand, because it's all just basically about imperialism here in New Zealand. And America basically broke away from the empire, one of the few countries to be able to do so. What was his name? Eddie Izzard, the comedian, he says something really great. He says, the British Empire conquered the world with the cunning use of flags. They went to India and they say, okay, this country's ours now. And the Indians go, wait, hold on a second here. We've been here for, like, since forever. There's, like, 500 million of us. Do you have a flag?
That's... Oh, man. But it's the truth. I mean, you just hit the nail on the head. There was imperialist expansionism. The British Empire at the time of the founding of the United States was the largest, most powerful, richest empire in the world. And basically George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, and all the other founding fathers decided to stick one in George's rear end and snap it off. And they succeeded. And that's the reason why I want to point this out to the listeners. We technically were terrorists. We were rebels. We were not towing the line. We literally went out and told the government to take a flying leap. We fought them over our rights to do as we see fit, to govern ourselves as we see fit, to have our freedoms, and we won. If we had lost, we would still be a British colony. We would have a parliament, we would be paying tax, and we would probably be miserable shits, but that's neither here nor there. New Zealand, Australia, Canada. Well, those are still, aren't they still part of England? I mean, you can travel to England as long as you have a New Zealand passport. You don't need to worry about getting a visa or anything. Isn't that correct?
You'd probably best ask somebody who can actually travel, because I got busted for selling cannabis in university about 10 years ago. So I'm not going to be able to travel for quite some time, if ever. God.
You're kidding me. You got arrested for selling a plant and now are restricted from traveling.
I got caught with 13 grams of it, and they said that it was worth $40,000, and I was going to go to jail for up to 8 years, but instead I got 300 hours community service and a conviction, and the guy in front of me was growing, I think, 5 plants, was convicted of sexual assault and resisting arrest, and he got 150 hours community service. So I recommend everybody get arrested by a corrupt cop that sets you up or spout some kind of BS, just so that you know, whenever you say, hey, that person should be arrested, or that person should be sent to prison, or that person should be shot, or something of that nature, you know, these kind of people who are just like sort of reactionary, redneck type mentality, where everything's about vengeance and punishment, as opposed to understanding and comprehending the actual situation in and of itself from all of the angles. That's the sort of thing that you really need to have happen in your life in order to become somebody like me, because I was severely traumatized by that whole ordeal. You know, I can give you the long story, but it took me like 3-4 hours or something like that on one show that I explained it. But the basic upshot of this is I went from believing cops told the truth, believing that the government is there to help you, believing that there's some form of economic freedom, believing that drugs were safe enough so that when you get busted for them, you wouldn't have your entire life destroyed. I went from those four basic principal assumptions as a young 19-year-old university student, and you can see exactly how those illusions sort of got lifted when you get arrested and the cops manufacture evidence in court, and you get a punishment that's comparable to what you would get if you accidentally killed somebody under manslaughter for a first offense with a full confession. And then you think about the government political process when it comes here in terms of the legalization of cannabis principles. And we have this member of parliament called Peter Dunn, who's for a Christian party called United Future. Now, I don't know what the mentality is behind Christianity, but what do you think is the sacrament of Christianity? Is it by chance alcohol that kills 1,000 New Zealanders a year, or is it cannabis that hasn't killed anybody ever? No? Oh, it's alcohol. And then it turns out that this guy gets payoffs from the alcohol industry and the tobacco industry, and he has been the linchpin of anti-cannabis sentiment in the New Zealand Parliament for the best part of the last decade and a half. And in fact, the only way he will ever actually give his little independent party the support to any ruling government is if they guarantee that cannabis is off the books, whether that be for the next four-year term or however long that these people wind up running in the campaigns. Now, this leads me to explain exactly how the New Zealand Parliament is different from the US Parliament. In the US Parliament, the executive, the judiciary, and the Congress and Senate and that kind of thing is very, very different here. Okay, so first of all, we don't just have two parties that do the exact same thing as each other and completely screw the country up while promising that they're not going to and then blaming the other guy. We've got like about 10 parties that do that and they all work together. So it's like...
Do it.
Yeah. I mean, you know how you get a choice in the States between a slap from the left hand or a punch from the right hand, you know?
Right.
In New Zealand, you get like, okay, how many left-handed slaps would you like, darling? How many right-handed punches would you need, okay? So we've got Labour, which is a red party, which represents the communism, which is the direct opposite of the spectrum in terms of colour than the Democrats, which are blue, which actually represent the same ideology. Allied with the red Labours are the Green Greens, the Green Party of Aotearoa New Zealand, who actually state in their environmental policy that it's Agenda 21, and they're the only party to do that. However, if you look at the environmental policy of the Labour Party, it's actually identical to the Green Party. And the other party, the other major one that we've got here, is the National Party. They're blue. And if you look at their environmental policy, it's almost word for word, Agenda 21, that is almost identical to what's in the Greens and Labour's environmental policies, wildlands areas, the whole lot. And so on top of that, we've got this thing called MMP, Mixed Member Proportional Voting. So when you vote for somebody, you actually get to vote for a candidate in that particular area that you are, and you also get to vote for a party. Okay, so you've got a number of parties in Parliament, and if they get over 5% of the vote in total, then they actually get to be represented in Parliament. If you get 4.9.999% of a vote, you don't get any representation in Parliament, and all of the other percentages are swallowed up by the other parties that did. Okay?
Wow.
And under New Zealand electoral law, it's more or less a proxy non-vote equals vote. So that means if you are one of the million people in New Zealand, this is a country of 4 million people, mind you, who didn't vote last year and were eligible to, your vote is automatically given by proxy to the winners. Okay, and it's simple mathematics. If there's 100 votes in the pool and only 50 people vote, then those 50 votes count as 100 votes.
Wow.
Yeah, that's how our electoral law works. And the last two elections have been extremely poor. The one just before the 2014 elections that we just had, had the lowest voter turnout in New Zealand history since 1886, and that was before we gave women the vote, and our vote in 2014 was even lower than that. And both elections have elected a man named John Key, who used to work for the Federal Reserve Bank of New York for 2 years, just after Glass-Steagall was repealed, as the head of the European bond and derivatives trade. And he got elected to lead the Blue Party in 2008 on a platform of change.
Jeez Louise, this is the guy, for all my listeners, John Key is the guy shortly after Glass-Steagall was repealed back in the 90s. He was, if you pardon the pun, key to the now huge $65 trillion derivatives trading market. if not for his policies and the foot that he stepped forward after Glass-Steagall was repealed, we would not be in the mess we're in. I mean, he basically laid the groundwork, and now he's in charge of one of the parties in New Zealand. Well, Vinny, we're coming up on the top of the hour. I'm going to get ready. Keep this in mind. We're going to keep talking about governments and how they're a threat. Our listeners really need to be aware. And that's part of being prepared. I know that this is not one of my typical shows. Vinny is a very, very good friend. I've looked up to him for years, and I'm just so proud and so very, very blessed to have him on the show this year, this 2015 now, I'm sorry. Vinny, if you'll just hang on, we're going to go to a break real quick. We'll come back as soon as the music is over. And I want to remind the callers, we have a call-in number, area code 567. 314-3081. If you have any questions for Vinny or myself, we can get those on the air, and we'd be more than glad to talk with you about them. Are you ready for a break, Vinny? I guess he is.
You betcha. And by the way, this is the first time I've been on radio since like November of last year. I had to take like a whole month off.
I know.
Oh, dude, when you're the Truth Movement's emotional counselor and comedian, you kind of take on a lot of other people's emotional baggage, and it does take some time to sort of like squeeze that out, sort of like a tube of fluoridated toothpaste out of your brain places.
Absolutely. So if you'll forgive us, Vinny and I
gotta pay.
Gotta go. We gotta empty the bladder, drain the main vein, let the lizard take a walk, as it were. Stay tuned.
I call it taking a wiki leak.
Oh, yeah. I love that. I'm going to take a wiki leak. I'm going to let out some secrets here. Yeah. So if you'll.
If you're using your Julian Assange, then you're doing it wrong.
Oh, my gosh, you're bad. Well,
we interrupt this program to annoy you and make things generally irritating.
All right. We're going to go on to a break, guys. Again, Vinny, thank you for being on. And everybody stay tuned. And welcome back to In Case of Emergency. I am your host, Don Pontius, author of Some Helpful Tips for Prepping and Some Helpful Tips for Bug Out Bags. I have Vinny Eastwood on the line. He has been most graciously accepting to being my guest today after taking a very long break from alternative media. Been on the radio. He's been off the radio since November.
Since December.
Oh, since December. That's right. We had plans to have you on a lot earlier, but you just needed a break. You needed to kind of like decompress and let off some steam. And, again, I want to point out to my listeners, I do have a call in line. If you have any questions for Vinny or myself, area code 567-314-3081. No, I don't have an 800 number yet for people in the U.S., but if you have a cell plan, it's free, guys. I mean, most calls on cells are basically free on the weekends. If you're international, you can use your Skype to call that number and ask questions. I don't have a problem with it. Just follow the prompts. It's going to ask you for the passcode 1776 pound. It will put you in the queue, and I'll bring you on. You can ask your questions. Now, Vinny and I were kind of discussing governments and how they're actually they're perverted to the betterment of the rich, basically. The rich and the powerful, they are not what they used to be, and how bad and how corrupt the government in New Zealand is, let alone what's happened in the United States. And half of this, guys, what does this have to do with preparedness? It has everything to do with being prepared. If you're not aware that there is an entity out there, whether it's a human being, a government, a terrorist organization, which could be a government for that matter, that is out there willing or wanting to do you and the loved ones that you have harm, whether directly or indirectly through physical violence or through legislation and laws that end up making you a felon just for getting up in the morning and doing something you should have the natural right to do. You need to be aware of this to be prepared for that threat. And so I wanted to have Vinny on because he's like one of the big voices in alternative media. And I'm not really all about the news. I do run some news-centric things like the Ebola outbreak, the flu outbreak this year. It's been ridiculous. How's the flu down there in New Zealand? Have you guys been hit yet?
No, not really. I mean, we because we're on the opposite side of the globe, your winter is our summer.
Right.
However, during the last month and a half, whatever allegedly of summer, it's been cold and windy and rainy. And apparently NASA came out not too long ago saying that the sun is like at an all-time output low, and it might be that way for a while to come. Like, I don't know. They speculated like 10 years or something of crap cold weather. And for me, I don't really know, because when it comes to the future, especially the future of your extermination, I find one thing very interesting. Stress about your extermination can cause illness that will kill you before you get exterminated. So sometimes the more you worry about things that are going down, the more likely they are to kill you before they even freaking happen. And
But that's the point, Vinny. If we're aware that there's a threat out there, it should remove a lot of the worry and a lot of the stress. Because, frankly, I'm not scared of the bear hiding in the woods more so than I am of the bear in front of me. But at least I can keep my eyes on the bear in front of me and be aware of what it's going to do as far as a threat. And I can mitigate that threat as much as possible.
And this is basically just about awareness of your surroundings and not denying reality. Okay, and that's basically all it comes down to when it comes to preparing for anything in the real world. The old Japanese saying is you keep one eye on the past and keep your hand on the future. It means you've actually got to be acting and responding and taking those actions now in order to prepare for that future, but you use the past as your guide to do it. So if you are an American and you look at your own history and you see that it's nothing but a history of power, powerful people basically jockeying for control over the lives of the people. And interestingly enough, it's sometimes when a bunch of different powerful people get together for decent reasons that you can really, really change things massively. Now, I'm not 100% sure what kind of lesson that connotes, but to me, when you think about freedom or trying to release a country from the tendrils of tyranny, it usually comes down to one person or a small group of people. And I think that what the mainstream media and mainstream culture have tried to sort of instill in everybody is the belief that they are not that person.
Right. Right. And let me kind of clear the air here for any of my American listeners. And you had this point, Vinny, too, but you used income tax as a point. Do you think you're free, Americans? Do you think you own anything? Do you pay property tax to a state or county or a city? You don't own jack. You stop paying those taxes. You stop paying income tax. You stop paying sales tax. You stop paying any tax whatsoever. And whatever that tax was on, they can take it from you. You own absolutely, positively nothing. You are not free. You are enslaved to the tax system. You're enslaved to the system. And they worked it out this way back in 1913 in the United States. There was no personal income tax. There was no personal property tax until 1913 in the United States of America. And I've seen over the past few years, Vinny, the steps headed towards a socialist state. Now, Saul Alinsky wrote 8 steps on how to create a socialist state, and I want to throw these out there, and we can talk about them. The number one step was healthcare. If you control healthcare, you control the people. Number two step was creating poverty. By increasing the poverty level as high as possible, poor people are easier to control and will not fight back if you are providing everything for them to live. That is a slave, boys and girls. Number three, debt. If you increase the debt to an unsustainable level, this way you are able to increase taxes, and this will produce more what? Poverty. Gun control. Remove people's ability to defend themselves from the government, and that way you're able to create a police state. Welfare. Take control of every aspect of their lives, from food to housing to income. The education system. If you take control of what people read and listen to, you take control of what children learn in school, you have taken control of their minds. Think Common Core here, boys and girls. Now, religion, if you remove the belief in God from from the government and schools. Now, I don't care if you don't believe in my God, just a God, a creator, a being greater than us all, that from whom all things, like you said, Vinny, it's the highest law in the universe. All of our rights come from that highest law. If you remove that belief from the government and schools, you basically make the federal government or the physical government the highest law.
And that reminds me of an episode of The Simpsons where Ned Flanders gets to be the principal of Springfield Elementary, and it goes to absolute hell in a handbasket. There's crazy stuff going. Kids are throwing stuff everywhere because he doesn't discipline everybody. And the superintendent comes in and he sees like children in cages and stuff being bullied by other kids who popped them in there. And stuff flying all around the place, and people like scratching the blackboards with their nails just for fun. And he goes, "Oh, this is fine. I'm sure the rest of the public school system will just be sliding this way anyway. Just lay back and enjoy it. It's a hell of a toboggan ride." And then Ned Flanders cues in over the intercom and he says, "Let's thank the Lord for another beautiful school day." And the superintendent goes, "That sounded like a prayer. A prayer in a public school. God has no place within these walls. Simpson, you get your wish. Flanders is history."
Oh, geez. And again, I want to point out to all of my intrepid listeners here in the United States that public schooling would not exist in the United States if not for
Prussia.
Christian believers actually founded, Yale, they founded Harvard. Those were actually biblically founded universities that have gone so far left of center. They've taken so far off from what their basic foundational beliefs are. They've actually tried to remove the word God from the motto of Yale. And it's only in existence on one plaque on one of the gates that was hidden by a tree. And it's still there. The school hasn't taken it down yet, but they're literally creating a godless society so that government is the new God. We worship government. And the last point of creating a socialist state is class warfare. And that can be not just class, but racial warfare. Any way that you can divide the people into two different classes, whether it's black and white, wealthy and poor, you create conflict on a everyday, out on the streets level, which demands a government to step in and take control. We have got to be aware of these things, don't you think, Vinny?
One thing that I've been arguing with a lot of people about recently, both in person and on social media, is the denial that there is any kind of planned agenda. Now, let me explain something. The people behind this planned agenda, people like David Rockefeller, Henry Kissinger, George H.W. Bush, just to name three American counterparts, have admitted publicly on record that this is their plan, that this is what they're doing, and that they're proud of it. Okay? They've admitted it. You don't, and this is the thing. This is not about evidence anymore. We've got all the evidence. We've got all the truth. This is about mind control. Okay? Specifically cognitive dissonance. People who are, and I've been through this. I'm not sure how many people have become aware of our current society's real problems that haven't experienced this. The grief stages. Your mother just died. And she died in a really terrible fashion. And the people who just killed her are now after you. Boom. How do you feel? First of all, you've got that huge amount of loss, anger, rage. You've got confusion, and you've got depression, and you've got all of the subsequent stages of grief. I think there's like six of them or something.
And there's five.
To learn that your government, say, for example, killed some of your people on 9/11, or at least played a hand in it, or at least allowed it to happen, is much similar to losing a loved one, because you're indoctrinated from high school, from the ground up, from the neck up, to see the government as your god, your protector, as a parent, more or less. And it's kind of like learning that your dad's a pedophile all these years, you know, and I never knew. And how bad an effect is that on you? Because you haven't just lost something that's a figment of your imagination that you knew was illusory. You just lost something that was very, very real to you. And this is why you get a whole bunch of truthers who go crazy. And believe me, if you haven't gone at least a little crazy from time to time trying to deal with the truth and evidence, there's probably something at least a little bit wrong with you, maybe. Because what society deems to be sane, you now have to learn is actually insane. And in an insane world, a sane man must appear insane. Hence why a lot of crazy conspiracy theorists, and I call myself a conspiracy theorist, mind you, are actually starting to kind of drift into the other side. And it becomes almost like they hold a pin on their fellow man, calling them a sheeple and that kind of thing, which I think is utterly disrespectful because you used to be one of them, okay? Which is why I call them slave scum instead. And the...
Oh, that's horrible. I mean, I would rather call them sheeple. I mean, I was one, yes. Agreed. We were all sheeple at one point in time, Benny, but calling someone slave scum is just kind of, well, let's just call them sheeple. It's so much nicer, and the connotation is that they think the barbed wire and the dogs are there to keep them safe.
Ah, but just because I'm calling somebody else slave scum doesn't mean I think that I'm not one of them too, okay?
Well, that's... I mean, I still think that I operate within certain constraints, constraints, I should say, of logical everyday process. I mean, Benny, honestly, I'm a slave scum or I'm a sheeple simply because I get up every morning, I get in my car, and I drive to a job that I need to make money in order to pay for all the things that I use and have every day. Yeah, exactly. I have a slave job just like everybody else, and I'm aware of it. That doesn't mean I'm any less free. It just means I'm aware of it. That's it.
Yeah, exactly. And what I'm trying to get through to people is to just accept, you know, the reality. I am a slave. I am basically scum that can be wiped off at any point by a jackbooted thug for absolutely no reason. And any complaints that go to the police complaints authority about that jackbooted thug in a blue or black uniform, whichever the case may be, not only will you be the one who gets in trouble, that cop that did the thing in the first place is going to get off, right? That's basically the way it is. The game is rigged. And the only way to win a rigged game is to cheat. And unfortunately... they're already cheating on us. Every single day we're getting cheated on, all right? Every time you put your signature down on a piece of paper in order to get out a loan for money that isn't in circulation and increases the ineffable amount of quantitative debt that is actually raining down and hammering absolutely everybody. You know, like, dig this, bro. Dig this. You're going to love this. In New Zealand, in 2008, before the Federal Reserve banker, who was common mark with the derivative market, came to be, we had $18 billion worth of national debt. Mm-hmm. In the first 8 years of his prime ministership, we got up to $112 billion in off-the-books derivatives debt, plus an extra $80 billion in on-the-books debt.
Wow. Let me point something out to the listeners out there. New Zealand has 4 million live registered residents. That is the same population as the city of Houston, Texas. They are a country that they have billions of dollars of debt. This is insanity. I mean, the state...
Hundreds of billions of debt. And the derivative ones that was like $112 billion can be leveraged over again and expanded endlessly as well. And they haven't been reported on since 2011. And a report that just came out yesterday was that our 4 million people are taking on something like $87 million of debt a day.
Well, I mean...
Or some crap. I don't know what it is. And here's the thing. Statistics start to lose their meaning when you go beyond what somebody can understand in terms of money. If I say $1 billion to you, have you ever had $1 billion? Do you know what you can do with it? No, you freaking don't. So you don't actually understand. It's too big for you. It's like saying that the nearest star cluster or something like that is 10 times the square of the root of pi of light years away from you or something. It's too big to freaking comprehend.
Well, let me throw this out into perspective, okay? We'll start with the dollar amount, $1 billion, since you brought that up. Now, for everybody out there who's listening, if you don't understand what $1 billion is, if you were born at the time that Christ was supposedly born, and you spent a dollar a second every day since he was born, it would take you 36,000 years to spend $1 billion. $1 a second for 36,000 years. I mean, that's every second you're awake and every second, not awake, but that's every second of every day of every year continually spending $1 after another. It would take you 36,000 years to reach $1 billion. We are in debt to the tune of trillions, which are $1,000 billion per trillion. So you multiply that by 1,000, it will take you, what is that? An additional, it'll take you 3,600,000 years to spend $1 trillion. It's insanity. If you spent a dollar a second of every day, day in and day out, since the birth of Christ, it would take you 36,000 years to spend $1 billion, 3.6 million years to spend $1 trillion. These numbers are staggering. And we're in $128 trillion worth of debt, unfunded and funded, in the United States of America.
They're not including the off-the-books derivatives markets, which are like $2 quadrillion, which haven't been reported on since, like, what, 2009, 2012, there about something?
And people wonder why I prepare for economic collapse, among other things. I mean, dude, I want to keep eating. I don't want to be like some schmuck in the Weimar Republic in 1929 going, well, if I take this wheelbarrow full of German marks to the bakery, I might get a loaf of bread. You know, they were actually burning German marks in 1930 to keep warm. They were papering their houses with them. They were so friggin' worthless. And that's exactly what's going to happen worldwide.
That reminds me of a scene yesterday from the Stallone movie Cliffhanger, where they got like these Federal Reserve notes that are denominated in $1,000 bills in these giant suitcases on the top of a mountain. And he grabs one of them and he's trying to get away, and they've got to build a fire and they're burning these bundles of $1,000 notes. And he goes, man, this place costs a fortune to heat.
That's great. Well, I mean, it's the same principle, guys. I mean, this is what alternative media is about, in my opinion. It's the reason why I kicked my prepping into high gear. I mean, I was all about being prepared for disasters and everything. I lived through Hurricane Andrew in 1992. I lost everything. I was all about disaster preparedness, but you know, some years ago, things just started to click. Nothing's working the way it should. And it was partly in listening to Vinny. It was partly in listening to Christopher Green and other members of the early alternative media movement that really kind of pushed me into high gear and becoming more and more aware of everything that's going wrong, painfully, pitifully wrong with this poor little world of ours and the societies that we have built economically, socially, in every way, shape, or form, that really kicked my prepping into high gear. And I don't talk about it a lot because I don't feel like I should inject too much of myself into encouraging people to be prepared, other than to give them some backstory about why I do this. But really, guys, you've got to listen to someone like Vinny. You've got to listen to Rob Revere. You've got to listen to Sean Raspatello. These guys, and they talk about what's called quote unquote conspiracy, quote unquote theories. These things are only theoretical to you because you haven't seen enough proof yet, or it's not been proven to your satisfaction. Frankly, guys, 20, 30 years ago, you could have told me that the Federal Reserve Bank was going to bankrupt the United States, and I would have laughed at you. And it's still considered a conspiracy theory if you believe that we're running into a brick wall, fiscally speaking. 99.9% of the people out there don't believe their government is shanking them.
Yeah, it's around about that. And having this sort of existence, when you do, in fact, go on the coalface and you're actually talking to people, you're looking at the research and things of that nature and commenting about it, it is actually quite a painful endeavor, and very few people can actually do it. They don't have the personality type. I mean, me, thankfully, I was bullied all the way through high school and rejected most of the time throughout about my life and come from a broken home. So being in front of many, many people and speaking my mind was something I actually had to develop as a survival mechanism. So I'm using that survival mechanism in as positive a way as I can. For every fault that we have, sometimes we've got a talent to overcompensate for it. And I think that actually is probably speaks to the best of us, really, is that the things that happen to you in your life, which are painful, expensive, difficult, and disillusioning, can indeed be the very motivation you needed in order to get off of your comfortable ass and do something about these things that are happening in the world. It's not somebody else's problem. You live here too. And when it comes to survival, you know, I heard the two funniest survival kit items that people don't think about. Number one, toilet paper. It's all good when you've got like pork and beans in a can, but when you have to wipe your bum with your hand, it gives a whole different perspective on survival. And the other survival item, which everybody has but very few people remember, is actually the most important. It's right between your ears all the time.
Your brain.
If you're thinking survival, you will survive. Or at least it's slightly more likely than somebody who panics and runs around screaming, "Oh crap, I'm gonna die."
What is that? That tells you, I always advocate, Minnie, and I always have, knowledge weighs nothing. The more you know, the less you have to carry. And knowing things and being calm and cognizant and having skills will keep you alive quite a bit longer than panic.
That's absolutely right. And also, In your general life, this is why I took a month off, Falcon, is because I was like approaching burnout. Doing this kind of gig, I mean, most radio show hosts don't last 6 months, let alone 12, let alone 4 years like I have. And there's a reason for that. It's because it's really intense. You have to be on the ball. You have to be paying attention. It's actually quite an operation to just pay attention fully and be there in completeness and be emotionally open with people for several hours a day on talk radio. And this,
absolutely,
know thyself. If it's time to take a break, if you're starting to get really angry at everybody for no reason, if you're retreating inwards, if you're starting to hate people just in general and not want to have anything to do with them, and you're still on talk radio and whatnot, you need to be taking a couple of weeks off, son, maybe a month.
I watched this documentary
one time, and they said that counselors, people who actually sit there as a job all day every day listening to people's problems, unless you're a sociopath, you can't hear people's problems without them becoming part of your psyche. Okay. Right. What you see and what you experience becomes part of you, whether you like it or not. And it's kind of like, I played a really, really nasty father character in a play one time when I was in 16. And after the play and the production was over, the drama teacher told us all to take a piece of our costume and say goodbye to it, and say goodbye to that character and throw it in the box. And I didn't understand at the time why they were doing that until I heard about Heath Ledger's death and what Jack Nicholson told him before he went to go and play the Joker.
Right.
Nicholson told him, don't play this role. It'll kill you.
It almost killed Nicholson. I mean, he had a lot of secondary effects from it. I mean, as campy as the 1989 Batman seemed, he did not act for about a year after that in a live role because he had to literally refine himself. I mean, he played a very believable psychopath, but Ledger dove in with both feet and just literally became this insane person, and it led to a very, very bad downward spiral. In fact, he was making his movie The Legendarium of Dr. Parnassus when the quote-unquote accidental overdose occurred. And I truly watch the beginning of that movie with an open mind, but I could see just the insanity, the frayed edges of his psyche peeking through at times, and it was really, really scary and dark.
And that's why it's so important to know yourself. It doesn't matter who you're listening to on talk radio, because you don't have a relationship with these people. If you're listening to me and you're not part of my life, if you didn't like come to my birthday or whatever and hang out with me and my mates for a couple of hours and have a few laughs or everything, you don't really know me. And just because you can hear it, just because you can see it, doesn't make it real. Your mind believes otherwise, though. Your mind will make this relationship appear real. That's why I lose so many followers in such a violent capacity so often, and have hundreds of people blocked on my Facebook because they think that they know me, and as soon as I say one thing that's even slightly outside of their paradigm, this pinnacle thing that they put people up on, and I used to do this to talk radio show hosts myself. I used to do that to people in general. You hold people in high esteem. But as soon as you see that they're actually really human, just like you, that you lose your inspiration all of a sudden in a lot of people, because you're expecting something different. And the savior mentality that all of us kind of like naturally have, we all want to be saved by somebody or something. We don't want to have to be the ones to fight off the lion by ourselves. We'd rather have somebody else do it, you know, with a giant spear or whatever, and skewer that big kitty right through the chest places, and so that we can go back to playing backgammon around a fireplace in the Kalahari bush. That's what we want, ultimately, at the end of the day. But unfortunately, you have to be the one to train yourself how to make a spear and to kill a lion if necessary. You are the one who has to know how to talk to a police officer properly so that you don't wind up having him, I don't know, do something really nasty to you. And sometimes there's no choices at all. Nothing is for certain. That's the real problem with it. And people cling to what they think is certain so blindly and so aggressively that anyone who says anything that's outside of their current belief structure, they perceive to be an enemy. Not just any enemy, but a dangerous enemy within. Start accusing you of being a shill or a crazy person or a conspiracy theorist. They'll throw out names at you. And again, like I say, if you're seeing it, you feel it. So that's half the reason why a lot of people don't survive in alternative talk radio, is because you will, I can guarantee you will be abused by countless people who don't know you, don't listen to you, and don't care about you. In life, you can only be friends with and associate with, if you want to actually achieve anything worthwhile, people who inspire you, people who encourage you, and people who enlighten you. If they're outside of that holy trinity right there, don't make an effort to keep those people in your life. I've lost so many friends. You know how many friends I've still got from high school, university, work history? Zero.
Yeah. I have four. And I can say without question, without equanimity, Kurt, the gentleman I wished happy birthday to at the beginning of the show, Sean, Gus, and I will mention the last one is Chance. These guys are friends from high school, from junior high school, that I've known for a good long while. I lost contact with them. I regained contact with them, and they are truly like brothers. I mean, these people are people that inspire me. They keep me going. They encourage me. They are true blue friends. Those are the people that I still have from my younger years. Other than that, I'm really just, I don't know these people anymore. It's been 25 plus years, in my case, almost 30. It's bad, yes, that I don't have friends from that era, but I have new friends. I have people like you that are part of that trinity. They do inspire. They do educate. They do support me. And it's just a phenomenal feeling. But I just want to say one thing.
I'll tell you what's on my mind. It's butt cold out here, and I'm fresh out of here.
And it is butt cold out here, man. It's winter in Texas. I mean, geez, talk about climate change. It's friggin' 30 degrees where I'm sitting, man. And this is not supposed to happen.
Yeah, well, I think it is supposed to happen because, as I mentioned, what did I mention in the last hour? That NASA said that the sun's got less output now or something like that. Plus, you know, if you interview Dane Wigington from geoengineeringwatch.org, he's been documenting all these cases where whether it's been snowing when it's above freezing point. You know, it's like physically impossible, but it happens anyway. And all these giant things, it's like artificial snow. They've been trying to burn it with a lighter. It won't burn. There's some really, really messed up stuff going on with the climate, and it can't all be natural. And we are live, ladies and gentlemen. Sorry for that little technical inconvenience. I don't know.
Yeah, I am sorry.
You know what we it felt like to me? It felt like a simultaneous technological failure. You dropped out and I dropped out off the internet at the same time.
It's a conspiracy. I actually had a blue screen of death. I honestly, Vinny, I think we got hacked. Oh, God. Come on. Get your tinfoil on. The Man in Black are coming.
Quick, jump to conclusions before it's too late.
Oh, wait. That's the only exercise I get. Give me a break. It's the only exercise I get, jumping to conclusions. Now,
I have a rope that I do it with, you know. I jump rope to conclusions.
And I apologize to all the listeners out there, Raz Radio, Revere Radio Network, and my home LMR, Liberty Movement Radio. Obvious technical issues. I got a blue screen of death. Vinny dropped out at the same time. He lost all connection. So we have no recourse but to believe it's a conspiracy. Smile when you say that, son.
Yeah. Okay, so speaking about solving problems and taking personal responsibility for it, have you seen the movie Malcolm X by Spike Lee with Denzel Washington? Brilliant film.
It was a brilliant film. And I don't necessarily...
Raz Radio.
I just got to get back in here. I don't necessarily agree with 100% of the political messages being put out in a lot of these films. But I do agree that the stories need to be told. I mean, the stories about Martin Luther King Jr. I heard that it made a really bad movie. The people who made the movie, they could have done better just putting it out on TV. Oprah Winfrey, of course, being involved. I hate that fat sow and all she represents. I mean, great on her. She's a successful black woman, multi-billionaire. But her politics and her beliefs are just not some that I can fall in line with. I heard the Martin Luther King Jr. movie was really, really bad. I mean, they could have done better on TV.
Well, I do think that what comes out of people, and it's like I was saying before about putting people up on a pedestal and having heroes and you have to agree with them on everything or whatever, that they're not human, okay, if that's the case. And if there is somebody on this planet that you agree with absolutely everything on, you should probably kill that person because they're trying to steal your identity.
I think that's absolutely right.
But there's two parts of that Malcolm X movie that actually really kind of spoke to me as a member of the truth movement. The first one, his description of the house Negro. Okay, now they're all slaves on the plantation, but there's a couple of house Negroes that live in the house. And when the boss is sick, they go, "Boss, are we sick?" And he cares about his enslaver. And when the other people say, "Hey, we need to escape, we need to get out of here," he goes, why? I got everything nice and comfy right here in the house." Right?
Right.
And that's the thing. We're all the slave Negroes because we don't want to leave the house. We don't want to leave that comfort. We don't want to leave that safety. It's almost like we believe that that is a fair compensation for being slaves, is that we get kept comfortable. But you don't really advance as a person if you're trying to keep comfortable all the time and remain a slave. Do ya?
I mean, it's like I said. I mean, if you think that you're free, you're more a slave than you realize. Our freedoms are not given to us by a government. It is not given to us by another person. Our freedoms are granted to us by the natural right of being born. You are a free being only by the rights given to you by the great creator of your belief or the great creator of the universe, in my opinion. But the fact of the matter is people think that their rights derive from a government, and that's wrong. And then you have other people in the liberty movement, in the anarchist movement, that believe that the United States government is nothing more than a statist thing, and it's far from that. It's 180 degrees around from that. Look, there's two terms that I encourage people to look up, and Vinny, you probably know these. They are collectivism and individualism. And G. Edward Griffin, he's an awesome author. He wrote the Creature from Jekyll Island. Very, very intelligent man. He made a series of videos called Collectivism versus Individualism. And you need to watch these videos. If you haven't, go on YouTube and look them up. There's like five or six of them. If you can't find them, go to my YouTube channel. Just search my name, Don Pontius, and you'll find it. It's one of my watch lists. Take a look at these videos. Watch them. And it's a profound thing. It doesn't matter what name you put on a political party, left, right, up, down. You have two principles that are vying for control. You have collectivism, which is the will of the group, versus individualism, which is the will of the individual. And our nation, the United States, was founded on principles of individualism. We are a republic. We're a constitutional republic where the voice of the one outweighs the voice of the many, or it should. We've slowly but surely been poisoned with this word democracy. The founding fathers hated democracies. They said it was the worst form of government ever invented by man. They were vehemently against being called a democracy. We were known as a republic until like when I was a kid, we're being called a democracy in the news. We're being called a democracy in the newspapers, on TV. We're not a democracy. I feel like slapping people every time they say, well, we're spreading democracy around the world. I'm like, really? You're a screw up. We're not a democracy. We're a representative republic. That's what we are. And democracy is just, it's a horrifying word. It's a collectivist word.
Yeah. Basically. There's a wee bit of feedback on there. But I was wanted to say that the other thing about it is the problem with democracy is that you expect the majority to be right all the time, the majority to solve all the problems all the time. And going back to Malcolm X, in the movie, this white woman comes up to him and she says, so how can I, as a liberal white woman who believes in racial equality, how can I help your cause? What should I do? And Malcolm says to her, nothing, and walks off. And what that said to me, kind of like taking that into a truth of perspective, imagine somebody comes up to, I don't know, a leader in the truth movement or something and say, how can I, as a socialist or as a believer in democracy, how can I support the truth movement and to bring about awareness of 9/11 and things of that nature? And you go, nothing. There's really nothing you can do, because you haven't kind of gotten over the fact that it's not your problem to solve. And more to the point, even if you start trying to participate, if you haven't had the prerequisite motivation to go out there and participate in the movement, you're not going to be in it for the right reasons. More to the point, you're not going to stay in it for very long. You're going to get disillusioned. Right. You're going to go out on the first day or something like that with a megaphone and a camera and start blaring stuff all over the streets and have people spit on you and somebody try to push you over or something like that. And you're going to get demotivated. You're like, oh my God, these people don't believe that it takes more than kerosene jet fuel to make 100 stories of steel and concrete explode into particleized dust. This is really, really unfortunate. People ain't going to believe you. People ain't going to believe you. I mean, just because, I mean, a dude said to me, but I've got the truth and I've got the facts and I've got the evidence. Why won't they believe me? It's because you're not dealing with people who are capable of absorbing that right now. It's kind of like being in a household where you were never loved or taught how to love. How are you going to love somebody else or create a household with that kind of environment? It just doesn't happen. It's basically like you have to realize what your limitations are emotionally, physically, spiritually, and then realize that it's kind of like a rubber band. You can stretch it so far to the point where it snaps, but you can keep stretching it a little bit at a time, and the rubber band will actually eventually start getting bigger. You can add things on like blocks of Lego and build yourself up slowly over time, or you can basically get really badly traumatized by some kind of authoritarian figure and grow up a lot quicker. Because, and again, this is why I recognize. Listener called me one time and he goes, "Vinny, my family won't believe me. They won't listen to anything I've got to say. What can I do?" And I go, "I don't know. Call the cops and say that they've got drugs hidden in the house or something like that." You know, because as soon as you get a SWAT team in your house, tearing apart your furniture, cracking open your TV and your stereo systems, looking for drugs that aren't there, and then not apologizing, and then arresting you anyway, and then planting drugs on you, and then throwing you in jail for a couple of years, you'll stop sticking up for their side of the story in a quick fashion. I'm not being entirely serious, but this is basically how it works. Trauma-based mind control, I think, can do two things to you. It can either A, do the Stockholm Syndrome thing, where you always stick up for your own slavers, or B, it'll basically incite a fire in your heart, in your mind, and you will use that trauma as a weapon to disable the powers that be from being able to do that to anybody else, especially those that you love.
Right. And again, it's all a matter of perspective, and the cognitive dissonance experienced by a vast majority of people out there, a vast majority of non-freedom movement listeners, non-alternative media consumers, is staggering. And, you know, everybody asks me, well, I'm trying to get my family to prepare. I'm trying to tell them about our government, tell them about the derivative market, tell them about economic collapse or civil war in the United States, or the possibility of a police state, martial law, etc. But they won't listen to me. They think I'm crazy. They think I'm paranoid because I'm preparing. And I just look at them and I say, you can't save everybody. I mean, there were only so many life vests on the Titanic, hon. There were only so many boats on the Titanic. You cannot save everybody. Those who are willing to grab the life vest or get in the boat, great. Those who are not, I love you, but I'm sorry.
Well, you know how there's many, many different roads to the same truth? I learned that truth in sales. You know, telemarketers, they call you up when you're having dinner and try to sell you something. Well, I was a telemarketer for a phone company that actually was saving people money on their bills. And chances are, even though you never heard of me, never heard of the company I was working for, every second person that picked up that phone would buy what I was selling them, because I could convince them pretty quickly that it was actually good for them and it was actually going to do some benefit. However, 50% of the calls don't listen to anything you've got to say. Do not trust anything whatsoever. I've had this phone company forever, and so on and so forth. Now, two reactions are possible at that moment of rejection. Number one, aggression, because, oh, mate, being rejected doesn't feel good. So often you'll get reactionary about it and you get angry. But because you're representing a company, you can't do that. And so now when you're representing the truth movement on the social forums and the media and the YouTube comment sections and things like that, you've got to actually restrain yourself as well, because you're not just uttering your opinion. What you're doing is you're also feeding fuel to the fire to anybody who likes demonizing truthers and might use your comments as an example. Okay?
Right.
And the other action upon rejection, instead of getting really angry at the people who reject your ideas, is actually just to hang up the phone and make your next call. Okay?
Right.
And look for somebody who's not totally belligerent and impossible to convince to talk to.
Absolutely. Vinny, we're gonna wrap up the show now. So why don't you go ahead and tell the listeners where they can get some more Vinny Eastwood, get some of that good Vinny Eastwood Show vibe from you, some of that awakening, that awareness radio. Why don't you go ahead and shill your products?
Well, my listeners often say, just hook it to my veins. Vinny in your veins. It's got to love that. Yep. Anyway, it's at the VinnyEastwoodShow.com. That's Vinny with a Y, because it's the most important question, and Eastwood as in go ahead. make my news. And I am raising money right now for some equipment so I can make my very first documentary. It's going to be a really, really good, fabulous one. If you go to the homepage of the VinnieEastwoodShow.com, you can check out the description of there. We're going to go into Freemasonry and banking, secret societies, roundtable groups, the UN, business roundtable, that kind of thing, Agenda 21, climate change control, toxic environment studies, including smart meters and Wi-Fi, dirty electricity, the corruption of the organics industry, Codex Alimentarius, and also how to basically capture a state so that you can influence at the top level all of its policies, as well as the intelligentsia and how they ship drugs everywhere in order to finance black ops and assassinate good people, and how they use false flag terrorism and what have you in a problem reaction solution type phase to change society as they want it to, along with many other topics, rounding off with a little bit of common sense solutions that everyone can implement in their own lives, some inspiring stories, discoveries, and case studies that illustrate successful resistance to tyranny throughout history and why there is cause for hope and a moral obligation to play a part in ensuring the survival of the free human race. I say free human race because there's not much point in survival if we're not free.
That's absolutely awesome points. And one of the reasons why I've always loved your stuff and your shows. And I want to encourage my listeners to go out there and support Vinny and his endeavors to make this this documentary, because I could not take it if I had to take it in 10-minute increments on YouTube. I mean, I would love to see a Vinny Eastwood documentary. It would just kind of blow doors on everything else. But I also want to remind listeners that I'm on that I myself am on the Week in Review with Kevin Harris coming up here in about 2 hours. It actually, I get on in the last hour of his show from would be 9 p.m. Eastern to 10 p.m. Eastern. I'm going to talk about some fermented food stuff and, you know, some other survival stuff, is and probably go crazy because Kovu's going to have butt hurt going on, because I talked to Vinny Eastwood here. Kovu Jenkai is the other Kiwi that I know. He's on the Week in Review, and hopefully he's going to have his own segment pretty soon. Vinny, thank you so much for being on. And I hope to have you on again in sometime in the near future. And I want to ask my listeners my simple question. Got preps? Pray for the best and prepare for the worst. This is Don Pontius. You've been listening to In Case of Emergency on Liberty Movement Radio, Revere Radio Network, and RAS Radio. Stay tuned for Kevin Harris and Week in Review up next.